support comes from Tub Cove. With over 49 years of remodeling bathrooms, Tub Cove can help simplify the process, offering tub and shower replacements and full bathroom remodels. Local and family-owned, with a showroom in Redmond. Designs and information at tubcove.com.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Remember a year ago when egg prices at the local grocery store went through the roof? Yeah, like with all groceries, inflation played a part. But the main story behind the refrigerator doors was that a massive avian flu epidemic had been decimating bird populations. Well, that avian flu outbreak is far from over. As of last week, the outbreak has affected more than 85 million poultry birds, making it the deadliest avian flu in U.S. history. If that wasn't enough cause for concern, cases of avian flu are now showing up in dairy cows. And in Texas, a case was confirmed to have jumped from a dairy cow to a person. Avian flu isn't normally transmissible to people, but the widespread nature of the current epidemic is leading researchers to wonder how the virus, officially titled H5N1, is evolving. We'll get to the human question a little bit later in this segment, but first, I've got reporter Anna King here to break down the bovine branch of this story. Anna covers Washington and Oregon, mainly east of the mountains, for the Northwest News Network. Anna King, always great to have you on the show. Thanks for being back.
Thanks for having me on, Libby.
So first, Anna, what have you heard about why and how cattle are contracting avian flu?
You know, perhaps the most concerning, Libby, is that they don't really know exactly how this is being transmitted between farms and between animals of the bovine species. You know, highly pathogenic avian influenza is in the environment everywhere because it's been such a problem for wild birds and domestic birds. And we have this migration coming up the Pacific Flyway that is coming north, and it's starting now, and it'll be a lot of birds, millions of birds in the next few months. And, you know, birds and cows interact more than you'd think. Birds really enjoy a little bit of extra corn or a little bit of supplement or a little bit of grain out of those feed bunks that cattle eat out of. It's very difficult to keep birds out of barns. And so they just come for the free meals. And they're really worried. The veterinarians around the nation are really worried that they don't know, is it people walking in droppings on their boots? Is it wild birds coming onto the farm properties and into barns? Or are there some sort of airborne transmission happening? They just don't know yet.
So we know avian flu is really tough on birds. I mean, it's similar to human flu. They get really tired and lethargic. And if they're on a farm, they have to be destroyed. There's no known cure. What does avian flu do to cattle?
So as far as we know now, avian flu in cattle is less devastating than it is in birds because it doesn't kill the cattle at the rate that it kills the birds, the chickens and wildfowl. It does really make the cow not feel well, though. The cow gets lethargic. The cow will stop eating and stop munching like regular. And the milk production is kind of a really good bellwether of how the cow is feeling. If the cow is feeling relaxed and calm and happy and fed, it'll produce a lot of milk. But if the cow feels sick or unwell or is hurt in some way, milk production goes way down. And that's what's happening with the avian influenza in the cattle. And so they kind of produce this like sticky, colostrum-like milk during the time that they have the bird flu. And they also kind of just go off their feed for a while. And so farmers can really have a huge drop in production. If their entire herd comes down with the avian influenza, the whole herd can just totally drop in milk production, and they might not have any available milk to sell.
How many cases have been confirmed in cattle? Are there any in Washington state so far?
So far, we have 26 herds over 8 states. That's Texas, New Mexico, Kansas, Michigan, Idaho, South Dakota, North Carolina, and Ohio. And we don't have any in Washington or Oregon so far. But what we do know is that there are a lot of herds having this effect. We don't know if it's just that they're looking for this disease now and finding it more, or if it is something really new, Libby. They're trying to know whether, again, like, is this being brought on by feed trucks that visit multiple farms, or is there air transmission? And there's many farms, particularly in the South and the Midwest, where there might be pigs, chickens, cattle, all on the same premises. And is there a spillover concern with those farms? Is there airborne disease that could travel from a poultry barn, for say, into a commercial dairy? They can be very nearby in proximity in some cases. And so that's a really big problem of is this going to be a spillover effect, and could it get into pigs?
You know, the first thing I think about when I hear that dairy cows are sick is what happens to their milk. I mean, how does avian flu affect milk from dairy cows that contract it? And I should say, of course, there's the pasteurization process with the dairy industry and, you know, a safety process, safety inspection process. I don't want to be alarmist, but Anna, what do we know so far about what happens when a dairy cow gets sick with avian flu? What happens to their milk?
So what's interesting is that the flu virus actually is most prevalent in the milk, more than the blood, more than other bodily fluids. The milk is where they're finding a lot of the virus. That being said, it might be attacking the udder, like the flu virus might have found a way into like the udder system of a cow, or in the processes that we use to milk the animals with those automatic milkers or other systems that touch the udders and the teats. That might be transmitting the virus. They don't know yet. But what we do know is that sick cows are immediately taken off the milking string, and that their milk is dumped from those sick animals. They're brought onto a separate system where they're milked, or they're milked the very last so that they can clean the whole system before they put the other cows back on. So there is good protocols for how to deal with this milk. And the other fact is if there was an animal that was not detected but was milked, they pasteurize all the milk that is commercially available, and that pasteurization process does kill the virus. So there's no worry about your cereal milk or what you're putting in your coffee.
How are local cattle and dairy farms reacting to this threat of avian flu?
I spoke with a dairy farmer this morning, Karen Steensma, who's up towards Linden, Washington. They own the Steensma Dairy and Creamery, which is an open pasture dairy. And I think that people are really worried, and they're even worried about what they can do. And they're worried about the complications or the limitations of what they can do legally or functionality wise on farms to protect themselves from wild birds and from this virus. They're all trying to up their biosecurity right now. I talked to folks who said that the Dairy Gold system, that is a large dairy system in Washington state, that they're all upping their biosecurity plans, and they all have these written plans on the farm to basically get all of the biosecurity measures they can upped right now so they can avoid this virus. They're also doing things like putting decoy coyotes and wolves out in fields to scare away ducks and other fowl. They're using speakers with hawk calls. They're pumping standing water near cattle. They're trying to cover grain bins and feed bunks where birds like to go and to get the grain from the cows. But really, this is a free lunch for wild birds, and it's hard to put them off it because they really like the grain. You know, there's also these cutting edge ways that they're trying to keep birds off farms, which is like using those things that they have at car dealerships with the wavy arms and the
yeah, those like hyper-colored things that kind of flap in the air. They're really tall and thin, like tube men.
Tube men, yeah, tube men. So they're using tube men, but what actually happened is the birds were scared of the tube men for like the first little bit, and then they figured out that their area of influence is pretty low, and so the birds just started eating the grain again. And then they started using falconers, which actually does, you know, professional falconers, which does help, but they're very expensive and you have to have them a lot of the time for it to be effective. And then they also tried to use drones, but the problem with the drones is that cattle don't like drones. Cattle don't like the sound of drones because it sounds like flies, like a big swarm of biting flies, and the cows run away from drones, and that doesn't do well for milk production. So keeping birds off farms is really, really complicated.
Yeah, and they're hungry while they're migrating. As you said, this is a time when a lot of birds are flying long distances. They want to stop off for a little snack in the cattle feed. And, you know, that's a problem when they potentially are vectors for this disease. Anna, what about the poultry industry? I mean, obviously, the avian flu epidemic, this is the deadliest ever in the U.S. It's killed millions of poultry birds. How has that affected production for the industry here in Washington?
You know, more than 6 million birds have died across the United States, and that has just been devastating to many farms who have lost their entire flocks, and sometimes flocks in multiple warehouse buildings. Just outside of Pasco, in fact, there was a story that I reported on of a farm called Oakdale Farms who basically lost 1 million birds and had to destroy all of those birds and had to rebuild their whole flock. And it's just really traumatic for the folks that go through it. And to think about this happening in cattle, you know, people really care about poultry and chickens, but just physically, a cow or a calf or a bull is much bigger than a chicken. And if we have some serious consequences with this avian flu in dairy cattle, or if it gets worse, the outward signs of the disease, if they get worse, this would be a catastrophe for most of our country because it's already throughout many states, and it just would be very difficult to deal with as far as even composting those animals or taking care of the biosafety security that we need so it doesn't spread.
And I would imagine, too, that these kinds of things put so much emotional and financial stress on farmers. The loss of livestock just places serious stresses on the people whose margins are already super thin, these businesses. What have you heard from, say, poultry farms about how avian flu has affected the industry in Washington state?
I mean, it's just really hard. It's the, you know, the most major case that I know about is, again, that case out of Pasco where 1 million birds were killed. And an egg-laying bird that is in production is worth a lot because they make eggs every single day that they're, when they come online as a pullet, and they kind of become a full-fledged chicken laying eggs, that takes a while to raise a chicken to that age. And then when they come online and they're giving eggs every day, that's a major investment. And to lose 1 million laying birds or 1 million birds, you know, some laying, some not, that's just a huge loss. And it's a really big bump to absorb for these farms that are already kind of on the edge and running thin margins. I want to talk about the dairies a little bit more, Libby. You know, in Washington state, milk is number two in commodities for the whole state. That is $1.6 billion with a B dollars of economic impact for milk at Farmgate. In Oregon, dairy is the fourth most valuable commodity at $557 million annually. This is a big economic impact, and if these industries suffer, so too will Washington and Oregon. And if we also think about this, you know, the milk industry and the dairy industry is really critical to like school children, to low-income families who all receive aid in dairy products. And so if our nation's milk supply goes down, there are real implications that this could have. And I think we're only seeing part of it now. People are becoming more aware of it. Veterinarians are having calls, you know, weekly, daily, to talk about what they're seeing in their states. But we're still learning a lot more about this disease right now.
Anna King covers Washington and Oregon, mainly east of the mountains, for the Northwest News Network. And Anna, I am so grateful for your reporting on the agricultural industry and the producers here in the state. You are so deeply sourced in this area, and you cover it with such sensitivity and, you know, really bring the importance of what's happening here to the fore for us. So thank you very much for your reporting.
Thanks so much for having me on, Libby. It's always a pleasure.
Now, I mentioned earlier that we're going to look at the issue of avian flu jumping between species, birds to cows, even birds or cattle to people. Scientists are learning more about newer strains of avian flu as they develop. Kevin Snekvik is the executive director of the Washington Animal Disease Diagnostic Laboratory at Washington State University. He says that avian flu has jumped to other animals before, but so far, they're unsure how it ended up infecting dairy cows.
So in particular, wild mammals, skunks and raccoons that have come across a bird carcass where there's a lot of virus in it. And the idea is that they're scavenging on that bird carcass and then they get a high dose of the virus, which then spreads into them and causes disease. In cattle, we're not quite sure how that's happening or how it made that initial jump. So we're still working on that at this point in time.
As Anna mentioned, the sickness isn't as severe for cattle. They get sick but seem to recover on their own. In the past couple of years, there have been two reports of people in the U.S. contracting avian flu after working near infected animals. One occurred in 2022 at a poultry farm in Colorado. The most recent case happened at a dairy farm in Texas, and this is believed to be the first known incident of H5N1 jumping from another mammal to a person. Globally, over the past two decades, there have been hundreds of avian flu cases in humans across dozens of countries. Many have been fatal. Snekvik says the good news is these don't seem to be variants of a virus unique to humans or easily transmissible from human to human. And the subtype involved in the case in Texas has symptoms that are relatively mild.
Very mild signs, some conjunctivitis, meaning redness of the eyes, that sort of thing. Very, very minimal disease. And then as far as the risk, what we're seeing is that the virus is not picking up mutations that would suggest that it's more virulent in mammals or in people, or be a risk to people at this point in time. People have been working quite hard on sequencing these new viruses that are coming out of the cattle to evaluate the risk there.
The CDC has warned doctors to watch out for patients who present with these symptoms after working with animals. The agency's website stresses that occasional sporadic human infections with H5N1 viruses do not change the human risk assessment to the general public, which CDC considers to be low. Thanks for listening to Soundside. And hey, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.